When you picture a massive digital heist, your mind probably goes straight to, I don't know, glowing green code raining down a screen.
Right, or some shadowy hacker in a hoodie typing furiously in a dark room.
Exactly. Or like highly sophisticated laser cutting through a server room floor.
Very Hollywood.
Very Hollywood, yeah. But what if I told you that one of the biggest, most consequential security breaches in modern tech history is completely different?
It usually is.
Right. It involves an unpatchable physical flaw, overnight eBay millionaires, and get this, a forgotten Star Wars racing game from the year 2002.
Which is just wild to even say out loud.
It really is. Because according to this massive new autopsy report we're looking at today, titled Autopsy of the PS5 Hack, Did Sony Lose the Game?
That is exactly what just broke open a multi-billion-dollar security fortress.
Yeah, we are looking at a masterclass in unintended consequences today.
So welcome to the deep dive. If you love exploring complex systems, you are in for a treat. Absolutely, because for anyone who just wants to understand how secure hardware actually works, this deep dive is a total goldmine.
Okay, let's unpack this. What is the fundamental difference here? Why is this hack so special?
Well, the fundamental difference between a normal software bug, the kind your phone gets a patch for overnight, and the hardware compromise detailed in this report is staggering.
Because it's physical.
Exactly. We're talking about a broken root of trust.
Root of trust, okay.
Yeah. And when a root of trust falls, the rules of the game don't just change for a few weeks until an update rolls out. They change permanently.
Wow. Okay, so our mission today is to trace how a microscopic hardware vulnerability collided with a two-decade-old pod racing game to bring down the PS5.
It's a crazy timeline.
And we're also going to examine this massive conspiracy theory floating around the report.
Oh, the profit theory.
Right, the idea that Sony might actually be profiting off the very hackers who are breaking into their system.
Which, when you look at the numbers, is a fascinating debate.
It totally is. So even if you have never held a gaming controller in your life, the corporate strategy and the wild secondary market economics at play here are absolutely fascinating.
For sure. But to understand how the fortress fell, we really have to start with a foundational crack in the armor.
Right, this happened 16 months ago in December of 2024.
Yeah. The initial breach came in the form of a leak. Specifically, the level zero boot ROM keys for the PS5 were dumped online.
Wait, the boot ROM keys? What exactly does that mean for the average person?
Right, so to understand the gravity of that, we have to define what a boot ROM is. It is like the very first piece of code that executes the exact millisecond you turn the console on.
Okay, so it's right at the start.
Its entire job is to verify the bootloader, which is the next stage of the startup process. The boot ROM uses these cryptographic keys to ask, essentially, is this the genuine Sony software I'm supposed to be running?
Ah, so it's like the bouncer at the absolute outermost door of the club,
Yeah.
checking IDs.
Exactly. But the critical issue outlined in the sources is that these keys aren't just a piece of software you can rewrite.
Right.
They are an eFuse.
An eFuse, like a literal physical
That
fuse.
eFuse is exactly what it sounds like. It's a microscopic physical fuse inside the silicon chip of the PS5's main processor.
Wow.
When Sony sets the key at the factory, they shoot a high voltage through specific microscopic pathways to literally blow the fuses.
They intentionally break it.
Yeah, breaking the physical connection forever to set a permanent one or zero. You can't unburn a wire with a software update.
So imagine building a state-of-the-art bank vault, right? And instead of putting the master key in a lockbox,
You cast the master key in solid steel.
yes, you cast it in steel and drop it into the concrete foundation of the building itself. If someone gets a copy of that key, you can't just call a locksmith to change the
No,
lock.
you have to tear down the entire building.
Pour new concrete, spend billions to redesign the architecture.
And because it's a physical trait, every single PlayStation 5 manufactured up to the point of that leak is permanently vulnerable. The hardware itself cannot be patched.
That is incredible. But how did hackers even read a microscopic burned fuse inside a chip?
Well, the methods hackers use to extract this key require extreme technical sophistication. The report outlines a few likely scenarios.
Okay, what's the first one?
One is physical reverse engineering. They use techniques like decapping.
Decapping.
Yeah, which involves using corrosive chemicals and an electron microscope to literally shave off microscopic layers of the silicon chip,
You're kidding.
atomic layer by atomic layer, to visually read the physical state of those blown fuses.
That sounds more like a chemistry lab than a computer hack.
It is hardware hacking at its most extreme. But the source also mentions side channel attacks.
Right, side channel attacks. How do those work?
They are incredibly elegant. Instead of looking directly at the data, the hackers measure the physical exhaust of the chip while it is doing math.
Physical exhaust, like heat.
Or electricity. Processing a binary one takes a tiny fraction more electricity than processing a zero.
Oh, wow.
By attaching highly sensitive equipment to the motherboard, a hacker can monitor the microscopic fluctuations in power consumption.
Or even the electromagnetic waves, right.
Exactly. And essentially, they listen to the math happening in real time to deduce the secret key.
That's brilliant.
There's also the possibility of a glitching attack, where they spike the voltage for a microsecond to make the security check skip a beat.
Or just an insider leak from a hardware supplier.
Also very possible.
Whichever method it was, the master key to the bank vault is out in the wild. But having a master key doesn't help you if you were locked out on the street.
Right. You still need to reach the vault door.
Exactly. The hackers still needed an entry point into the PS5's operating system to actually use those leaked boot ROM keys.
They needed a door. And the supply chain of how they found that door is arguably the strangest part of this whole report.
Oh, totally. Because the entry point was discovered in a PlayStation 2 racing game called Star Wars Episode I, Racer Revenge.
Originally released in 2002.
The game from 2002.
Yeah. But in 2020, a boutique publisher called Limited Run Games produced a physical PS4 disc version of this exact PS2 game.
The specific disc ID is CUSA03474.
That's the one. It was a very niche collector's release. Only about 8,500 copies were printed globally.
So fast forward to December of 2025. A security researcher named Designer Leak discovers a vulnerability in this specific game.
And two other hackers, known as Mast1Core and Gizine Dev, realize they can use this vulnerability on the PlayStation 5.
Specifically on consoles running firmware 12.0.
Right. They take an exploit known as a buffer overflow found in the game's save data system and weaponize it.
Wait, a buffer overflow? That sounds highly technical. Can we break that down?
Sure. Think of it this way. Imagine you're filling out a paper bank deposit slip.
Okay.
The box for your name only has enough room for, say, 10 letters.
Right.
But you start writing a name that is 50 letters long.
So I just keep writing past the edge of the box.
Exactly. Your pen keeps writing right outside the box, spilling down the paper, and you end up writing directly over the account balance box.
Changing my balance from $10 to $1,000,000.
Precisely. The game's digital buffer is that limited box. The hackers load a maliciously crafted save file into the Star Wars game containing far more data than the buffer was designed to hold.
So the digital box bursts.
It bursts, and the excess data spills over into areas of the system, memory it is explicitly not supposed to be in.
But the console reads it as a normal save file.
Right, but that spilled over data is actually custom hacker code overwriting the system's core instructions. From there, the code calls upon the leaked boot ROM keys.
To completely bypass the system security.
Dropping the hackers straight into the kernel, the absolute core of the operating system.
The secondary market reaction to this discovery was pure chaos. According to the source data, before December 2025, this obscure Star Wars disc was sitting on eBay for maybe $20.
A totally forgotten game.
Once the exploit went public, the price skyrocketed by 3,000%.
It's wild.
By April 2026, people were paying anywhere from $500 to $800 for a single physical copy of a 2002 pod racing game.
A piece of plastic pressed in 2020 containing code from 2002 suddenly became the most valuable cybersecurity tool on the planet.
Okay, hold on. If Sony knows this specific Star Wars disc, CUSA03474 is the exact Trojan horse being used to breach their kernel, why not just push an update that blacklists that exact disk ID?
Just block it from running entirely.
Yeah, just tell the console, if this disk goes into the drive, refuse to read it.
Well, Sony has implemented blacklists in newer firmware. The limitation of this specific exploit is that it relies on the console running firmware 12.0 or lower. It also obviously requires a disk-based version of the PS5. But most crucially, to keep the exploit active, the console must remain strictly offline.
So you can't connect to the internet at all.
The moment a compromised PS5 connects to the PlayStation network, Sony servers force an update, patch the entry point, and flag the system.
So it's a very fragile state of affairs. You pull off the heist, but you have to live completely off the grid.
Exactly.
If you hack your console and you eventually make a mistake and connect to the internet, Sony is going to catch you.
They absolutely will.
But the way they drop the hammer, the actual method of punishment has created a massive controversy within the tech community.
Yeah, the source material details some striking statistics from the first quarter of 2026. Sony suspended 93,000 compromised accounts.
93,000 accounts? That is a lot.
But the detail driving the community crazy is that Sony does not ban these accounts immediately.
They wait, right?
They wait an average of 30 days after detecting the hacked console to actually lock the account out of the network.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because there are two totally different theories outlined in the report regarding this 30-day delay.
Right.
The official corporate theory is that Sony uses that month-long window to quietly gather legal evidence.
They map out the broader hacker networks,
right,
monitor who is communicating with whom, and build a massive investigation before they strike.
Standard cybersecurity stuff.
Standard robust practice. You don't just swat the first mosquito you see. You follow it back to the swamp to find the breeding ground.
That makes perfect sense. How do they even detect them, though?
Their detection methods are highly sophisticated. They rely on telemetry data, meaning the console is constantly whispering back to Sony's servers about what it's processing in the background.
Okay.
They check the digital signatures of the firmware against known official versions. They even analyze impossible trophy unlock times.
Wait. Trophy unlock times?
Yeah. If a user unlocks a trophy that requires 50 hours of consecutive gameplay just 3 seconds after booting the game for the first time, the telemetry system instantly flags the anomaly.
Busted. Okay, but then there's the hacker community theory, which is much more cynical. And honestly, the math is compelling.
Good profit theory.
Yeah. They believe the 30-day delay is a hidden, incredibly lucrative marketing strategy. Put yourself in the shoes of one of those 93,000 users. You ran the exploit. You connected online by mistake, and nothing happened. You think you got away with it.
So over the next 30 days, you treat the console normally.
Exactly. You buy two new digital games. That's about $140. You grab a month of PS Plus for $10. You order a new controller or a headset for $50.
And if you multiply that estimated $200 of spending by the 93,000 accounts that Sony allowed to keep playing,
that yields roughly $18.6 million in revenue.
Just from delayed bans.
It is the equivalent of a casino manager spotting a card counter at the blackjack table. Instead of having security throw them out immediately, the manager tells the pit boss, let them keep playing.
Let them order a few expensive steaks and some top shelf drinks.
Let them hit the gift shop, then kick them out.
It's a great analogy.
Sony is pulling in almost $20 million off people they already know they are going to permanently ban. I mean, if you're listening to this, imagine finding out a company knew you were violating terms a month ago, but waited until you bought a new accessory to pull the plug.
It's definitely controversial. While $18.6 million is essentially a rounding error for a massive conglomerate like Sony, the broader ecosystem implications of this delay validate both theories.
Because they get the data and the money.
Right. Sony gathers vital intelligence on hacker behaviors and spoofing methods like how they use VPNs or mask their firmware signatures while undoubtedly collecting revenue from doomed accounts.
This dual benefit brings us to the overarching question posed by our source text. Did Sony lose the war against hackers, or are they secretly letting them win?
The console sales data we have makes you wonder. Following the news of the initial boot ROM leak back in Q3 of 2024, Sony had sold about 4.2 million units for that quarter.
But sales didn't drop, they surged.
By Q1 of 2026, sales reached an estimated 7.1 million units.
That is a 69% increase in quarterly sales after the system was fundamentally broken.
The contrast with previous console generations provides crucial context here, too. The report notes that the PlayStation 3 was hacked after 4 years on the market, and Sony fought back aggressively.
With immediate lawsuits and rapid firmware patches.
And hardware revisions.
Mm-hmm.
The PlayStation 4 took 3 years to hack, and Sony met it with a measured, consistent response.
But the PS5?
It took 4 years to hack. But cybersecurity experts describe Sony's current response as unprecedentedly slow and weak.
Okay, wait, I have to challenge this correlation. A 69% bump in console sales is massive. Couldn't that just be the result of a normal holiday season cycle?
Or a sudden price drop, sure.
Or a killer lineup of new exclusive games hitting the market. Are we really supposed to believe that hackers buying second, third, or fourth replacement consoles are moving the needle by millions of units?
Skepticism is entirely warranted there. Correlation certainly does not equal causation, and attributing a multi-million unit sales spike entirely to a niche community of hardware hackers is a stretch.
Right.
The gaming industry analyst quoted in the source text, however, argues that the reality of the business model remains intact regardless of the primary cause of the sales spike. The hack and ban cycle drives continuous hardware sales. Whether this slow response is a Machiavellian corporate strategy to boost hardware numbers, or simply corporate sluggishness combined with the sheer technical difficulty of patching a physical eFuse vulnerability.
Sony benefits from the increased hardware sales in the short term.
Exactly. Even if that user eventually gets banned, a sold console goes down on the ledger as a sold console.
Well, regardless of whether Sony is turning a blind eye for profit or simply struggling because the hardware is too difficult to fix, the hacker community isn't stopping.
No, they are marching toward total unrestricted control of the console.
And that brings us to the future and this looming threat of CFW.
We need to differentiate the terminology here quickly. Yeah. What we've been discussing so far, using the Star Wars save data to run custom code, is essentially a jailbreak.
A workaround.
Right. It allows you to run unofficial apps, often called homebrew software, alongside Sony's official operating system.
But custom firmware, or CFW, is the holy grail for these developers.
CFW means completely wiping and replacing Sony's operating system entirely.
Wow.
It hands the user total unrestricted control of the bare metal hardware. You could install alternative operating systems like Linux, alter clock speeds, and run pirate game backups natively without tricking the system.
As of Q2 2026, the source notes that homebrew applications and PS4 backup loaders are 100% functional on these compromised PS5s.
And the timeline projected in the report for custom firmware is highly aggressive.
Very. The developers are predicting native PS5 game loading by Q3 of 2026.
They expect an alpha, unstable version of custom firmware by Q4 of 2026.
And the analysts given a 30% chance of a final, fully stable custom firmware release hitting the public by Q2 of 2027.
This entire push is being driven by specific heavy hitters in the scene. Names like SpectreDev, who was known for the previous TX jailbreak.
And Mast1 Core, the one who helped weaponize the Star Wars export in the first place. So what does this all mean? If Sony's 30-day ban delay isn't stopping the hackers and hardware bans aren't scaring them off, what is the end game here? What happens when these developers completely win?
Well, the hackers still face severe technical challenges. The PS5's internal architecture is incredibly complex, and the advanced encryption layered onto native PS5 games remains a massive hurdle to clear.
Okay, so it won't be easy.
No. Moreover, Sony is actively preparing countermoves. The projections map out faster, more aggressive ban waves in the short term to disrupt the ecosystem's communication.
And on the hardware side?
By Q4 of 2026, the industry expects a minor hardware revision, basically a silent update to the manufacturing process to alter how that specific eFuse vulnerability operates.
Ah, so they are going to pour the concrete foundation correctly this time so the vault key can't be read.
Precisely. Looking further ahead to 2027, the inevitable PS5 Pro hardware iteration will almost certainly feature an entirely new security architecture.
Completely rebuilding the root of trust from the ground up.
Yes. To render these current exploits useless on the new machines. I should also impartially report the legal and ethical warning from the source text here.
Of course.
This activity is illegal in many jurisdictions, violates hardware terms of service, and rampant piracy fundamentally harms the game developers who spend years creating these titles.
It's an important reminder, but when you step back, you're looking at a fascinating asymmetric arms race.
Definitely.
On one side, you have the multi-billion-dollar corporate engineering teams at Sony.
And on the other side, you have dedicated enthusiasts scattered around the globe collaborating on message boards.
Leveraging a pod racing game from 2002 to bring a titan to its knees.
It perfectly illustrates a modern tension. This is really a story about hardware ownership versus corporate ecosystem control.
And the massive, totally unintended consequences of legacy media interacting with next-generation security.
Yeah.
We started with a microscopic, unpatchable physical hardware leak burned into the very silicon of a modern console.
Useless on its own.
Right. That leak was entirely useless until someone realized they could write outside the box of a digital save file for an $800 eBay copy of a Star Wars racing game.
It's just an unbelievable chain of events.
And that single exploit opened the door to a landscape where Sony might be making millions of dollars utilizing a 30-day ban delay on the very people hacking their systems.
It's quite a story.
It really is. And that leads me to a final thought for you to mull over. We've seen how an old forgotten physical game disc from 2 decades ago can act as a Trojan horse to break a modern security fortress.
Yeah.
If you look around your house right now, what other seemingly harmless physical media or legacy tech is sitting on a shelf waiting to be the key to the next major vulnerability?
That's a scary thought.
Right. Does this mean the tech industry's relentless drive to digitize everything to kill off the physical disk isn't just about corporate greed and controlling your library? Is abandoning physical media the only way these companies can ever truly secure the concrete vault of their hardware? Think about that the next time you pop an old disk into a new machine.